Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Voters will not only elect candidates to the Senate, Congress, and the General Assembly this week, they will also have their say on a little-publicized constitutional amendment that would allow criminal defendants to waive their jury trial. Here to help us understand the amendment and the arguments for and against it is Jeff Welty, a professor in the UNC School of Government. Well, thanks for being with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of confusion about this constitutional amendment, and a lot of folks just have no idea that it's going to be on the ballot. So maybe you could give us a brief explanation of what this amendment actually would do.
Sure. In North Carolina, a criminal defendant who's charged with a felony offense and wants a trial has to have a jury trial. There's no provision in state law for a trial just before a judge or what lawyers call a bench trial. All of the other 49 states and the federal government allow criminal defendants under some circumstances to have a bench trial, and this constitutional amendment would change our state constitution to allow a defendant to waive his or her right to a jury trial and instead indicate a preference for a bench trial.
And before we get into sort of the pros and cons of this, I wonder why North Carolina is the only state in the country that is in this situation.
It's a good question. Historically, almost all the states had what North Carolina has now, which is a rule that any trial has to be a jury trial. And over time, that's changed in every other state out of efficiency concerns and others. In North Carolina, that change has been slower to arise. And I think part of the reason is that in North Carolina, it is a constitutional provision, a state constitutional provision that would have to be changed in order to allow bench trials. So whereas other states might have just been able to pass a law, pass a statute, in North Carolina, to enable bench trials, we have to have a state constitutional amendment. So it's a significantly higher hill to climb here.
I think there's a presumption that when an amendment is put on the ballot, that the lawmakers who voted for it support it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have put it on the ballot. So let's talk a little bit about what the arguments are for doing this and joining the other 49 states.
Sure. And the proposed amendment passed the General Assembly overwhelmingly with just a single dissenting vote. So I think you're right. There's some suggestion there that the legislators who put this on the ballot think that it's a good idea. And the couple of main arguments that people advance in favor of allowing bench trials are, number one, there's some potential efficiency. Trials can be faster when you don't have to select a jury and you don't have to worry quite as much about what kinds of evidence can be admitted and not for fear of tainting the jury. So that efficiency argument is number one. And then number two is a fairness argument that in some cases a judge might actually be a better decision maker than a jury. For example, in a case that involves highly technical evidence that a judge might be more familiar with, or a case where the defendant is charged with really odious crimes that a jury might recoil against and make an emotional decision, whereas a judge who's more used to dealing with allegations of that nature might be able to be more fair to the defendant.
And to be clear, these are felony trials, but not capital cases.
That's right. The proposed amendment would not allow a defendant against whom the state's seeking the death penalty to waive a jury trial, so a jury would still have to be involved in that.
Before we talk about a little bit about why it might not be a good idea or what some of the arguments are, it's interesting that, and I've heard others talk about, that a judge might be able to look at whether it's technical evidence or, for lack of a better word, maybe give a more fair rendering of guilt or innocence. But what does that say then about our jury system?
Well, it suggests a criticism that folks have made for a long time, which is that in some cases, jurors, because they're drawn from a cross-section of the community, may not be prepared to deal with the type of scientific and technical evidence that's more and more common these days. Now, so many police investigations involve digital trails and tracing IP addresses, GPS tracking, and that kind of information. There's an argument that it is really a specialized skill to understand that type of information. Right to a jury trial's constitutional right, and it's not going away, but it does raise questions about the institutional competency of various actors to make decisions.
Well, let's talk about some of the arguments against doing this and joining the other states. One I know you identified would be judge shopping, which is a term I think a lot of folks have heard.
Right. Even in the current system, there's an incentive for prosecutors to try to maneuver cases to get them before judges that are perceived to be pro-prosecution, and for defense lawyers to try to maneuver their cases to get them before judges that are perceived to be pro-defense. But whatever that incentive is in the current system, it would be multiplied a hundredfold when the judge is not just sort of overseeing the trial, but is actually the decision maker. So you could imagine that a lot more time and energy would be spent maneuvering and positioning cases to try to get them in front of favorable judges. And then you can imagine that if parties are successful in doing that, you might have cases that are being decided really by the pretrial maneuvering and not by the merits of the case.
I was also interested in something you called undue favoritism with influential lawyers and how that would work. Tell us about that thought.
The concern there is that some defense lawyers who are very prominent, well-connected, well-known to local judges, contribute generously to their campaigns, might have tremendous influence with those judges. And folks who are concerned about that point to the way that DWI trials in this state and in others sometimes work. Those are misdemeanor cases, so they can be tried by a judge in the current system. And the News and Observer, for example, has done a long investigative reporting series that indicates that some lawyers practically never lose DWI trials before some judges. And so that raises the possibility that some lawyers might be so well connected or so wired in with certain judges that it would be hard for the state to get a fair trial in a bench trial involving that type of lawyer and that type of judge.
And finally, in the arguments against, I guess there's just the overall philosophy, and you identify this as well, that it sort of reduces how much individual citizens have interaction with their criminal justice system. I mean, most people are not charged with a crime, but most of us at one point or another are called for jury duty.
That gets back to the historical roots of our jury system in the English common law and the reason why states started out with a requirement of jury trials. And I think there is a sense that jurors are a voice of the community in a way that judges aren't, and that it's a good thing for citizens to have direct input into the criminal justice system. So for some folks, at least, any move to bench trials is still going to carry an element of loss that the community may be involved less directly and in fewer cases.
You know, most of these constitutional amendments that we've seen are relatively controversial, or and there are interest groups lined up on both sides, and there's a lot of attention to it, but that really doesn't seem to be the case. Are people lined up on both sides of these?
Not very much. I think you're right that sometimes we have really controversial state constitutional amendments. Sometimes we don't. We amend our state constitution unbelievably frequently, at least compared to the federal constitution. But this amendment really, at least initially, didn't attract very much attention. It's sort of a stealth amendment. It didn't generate any controversy in the legislature. And I think now, as it comes closer to being voted on, I think folks are scrutinizing it a little bit more carefully. And I think folks are questioning a little bit more whether it's appropriate or what the costs and benefits are. But you're right, at least initially, folks didn't line up on one side or another. And even now, the interest groups that have expressed an interest in it and are concerned about it haven't necessarily taken a position on it. So if history's any guide, it's probably going to pass. Most of our state constitutional amendments do, and this one had a lot of support in the legislature. But I do think that it's a closer question and a more interesting question than folks maybe at first thought it was.
Well, thank you very much for helping us understand this, and we really appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for calling some attention to the issue.
Up next, the dean of North Carolina's congressional delegation looks back on his long career. Stay with us.